This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Cold Station 12. Hello and welcome to Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave.
And my name is Yannick.
And on this week's episode, we are going to review the Season 4, Episode 5 of Star Trek Enterprise, entitled Cold Station 12. And we're going to discuss some of the news that we've been made aware of over the last couple of weeks. So, Yannick, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm excited to record this fifth episode for our show. Actually, sixth if we count the Episode 0.
Yes, if we count Episode 0,
well, absolutely. Seven if we count two Episode 0s.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that's in the same bin as Voyager.
Yes.
I'm quite looking forward to sort of continuing this little arc series that we're in the middle of at the moment. We're in the Star Trek Enterprise. We're currently in the middle of a three-parter, and having just seen the second part of this three-parter, I'm really excited to see where it's going to be going next week. But we'll talk more about that later on. We should, of course, say thank you very much indeed to Ryan Duskeek for joining us last week.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had immense fun in that episode. I really enjoy going back and listening to the final episodes once they've been released.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah. I did the editing last week, and then as soon as it was published, I downloaded it and I started listening to it again. And thank you, Ryan. It was really great to have you on the show. And I'm looking forward now to maybe some other hosts, other co-hosts, other guests. I don't know. That will be a surprise.
Yeah. Well, we might have some news about that towards the end of tonight's show. Have you been doing anything particularly Star Trek-y?
Yes,
this past week.
Actually, I have been playing with my new smartwatch. I got a new smartwatch about 2-3 weeks ago, and you know how you can change the what do you call that, the faces of the
watch faces.
The watch face. Okay, so I was looking in the catalog of community submitted faces, and guess what? 2 minutes after I started browsing this repository, I found an Elcor's face for my watch. So I played with that, and I'm now wearing a smartwatch, which not only is smarter than myself, but also have a Elcor's interface. So the only thing it doesn't do is that it doesn't respond when I say watch.
What watch do you have?
A Fitbit Versa.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. That was the one that was supposed to be the replacement for the Pebble, wasn't it?
I have no idea.
No. Sorry, it wasn't. Versus the one that Caroline's got. It's the Ionic that was supposed to be the replacement for the Pebble. Excellent. Well, I'll try and see if I can persuade Caroline to adopt that watch face, but I don't hold much hope, if I'm perfectly honest. Amusingly enough, when... Caroline and I, we've been married for 18 years this year, and when we first started going out, I became aware that she had these fact files of Star Trek, which I think were mostly around original series Next Generation, in her room, like paper files of these things, which sadly didn't make it when we moved down south, when we moved house. But I didn't actually realize how much of a Star Trek geek she actually used to be. Sadly, not so much the case now.
Ah, that's too bad. She could have been a co-host with us.
Well, I'm sure I could ask her. I mean, if she's willing to watch some of these episodes with me.
Okay.
Maybe the standalone episodes rather than the arc plot ones that we're doing at the moment. But I can ask her. And in fact, maybe she even might watch Picard with us.
Nice. Caroline, you are now officially invited.
Yeah, well, she was anyway. She knew she was, but I don't know whether she's particularly, you know, down with it. Anywho, shall we crack on with this review of episode 5 of season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise, Cold Station 12?
Absolutely.
So at the beginning of the episode, there is a brief recap of the events of last week's show. I'm not going to go on those because, well, we know what happened last week, don't we?
Yes.
After the recap, we then jump back in time 11 years. And we get taken back to 2144, where we see Sung giving a lecture to his young children. And I'm doing air quotes around the word children here. And he's remarking on how genetically engineered people like them have been feared by humans since the eugenic wars of the 20th century. And a young Malik, so who would have been sort of 9, 10 years old at the time, asks if there are any others like them. Sung, of course, remarks that there are, and that one day it will be their duty to free them. Now, one of my issues, if you can hear singing in the background, that's my son. One of my issues with this is that it appears to me as though Sung is already conditioning them to be outcasts. He's already putting a wedge between them, the augments, and the humans by using such language as us and them.
Yeah, I picked that up too. It was, almost brainwashing them, telling them already, you know, you're better than anyone else, and then we know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and it surprised me to an extent because, of course, Sung isn't an augment. So say he's not an outcast. Yes, he is. He's not an augment. He is a human. So for him to be separating these, you know, up and coming superhumans from the rest of the human race, it just didn't sit right with me at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was, I still don't know if I, you know, really liked what he said there. I mean, it fits with the rest of the story, but it doesn't seem to fit the character.
No, certainly not the character we know here. But again, we are talking 11 years ago.
Yeah.
So the Sung that we know, this is the first time we've actually seen him interacting at this particular timeline. Mm-hmm. We then come back up to current time, and we see Sung and his grown augment children on their way to Cold Station 12 aboard a Klingon bird of prey, the one that they hijacked last week, with the intent to free other embryos following his escape from the Enterprise. And as they plan their mission to steal the remaining embryos, Malik notices that they can take out the life support system quite easily. This is of the station, of Cold Station 12. But Sung dismisses this as it would kill the staff. He makes it clear that no one is to be killed, even if they put up a fight. And Malik reluctantly accepts that. And you can see he was battling with this.
Yes, absolutely. And that's that was the first glimpse of what's to come. And we're going to talk about that later. But when I saw that, I thought, there's something here. Something is going to happen between those two.
Yes, absolutely. And this is the point where I've started to notice that there is a growing gap between Sung's ideals and Malik's morals, to the point where actually I'm now believing that Malik doesn't have any morals. He's become more of a savage than of the enhanced human that Sung seemingly intended him to be.
Yes, I agree with that.
And if you put the two together, it makes me believe, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, that Sung isn't the bad man.
Well, I'm going to talk about that later.
Mm. Right, so yeah, we get the credits and we go into the episode proper. So Enterprise is now arriving at the planet Trialis 4, sorry, I can't read my Roman numerals, which is the settlement where Sung raised his children. And as they entered the structure, Tucker finds that some medical equipment from the settlement has been recently taken. And Archer orders him to find out exactly what was removed. Now, there was another scene here that was missed from the review that we've taken. Of course, we give a big shout out to Memory Alpha for their summary that we're basing this on. And we saw some video footage that Archer was looking at showing Sung and the children celebrating what I assumed to be all of their birthdays. And Archer was watching this, and his reaction was, well, I'll be damned.
Yes, I didn't really understood why.
No, I didn't either. Other than the possibility, that it's showing Sung in a scenario, in a light that perhaps Archer would not have expected.
Yeah,
because if you look at that video footage, it looks like a loving family.
Yeah, that's the conclusion I came to, but it's only a conjecture. I mean, there's nothing in this scene that can, you know, prove that we're right or wrong about that.
No, not at all. And to be fair, I don't think there's anything else later on down the line that does that either. So Malcolm and a detachment of Makos are searching around the settlement, and they've discovered a person. After this person, Udar, as we find out what is his name later on, after he tries to escape, Captain Archer punches him and knocks him out. And I thought that was brilliant. Very quick reactions from Archer there. Although I did find it very interesting how they almost managed to talk him down.
Yeah, almost works, but nope.
But the moment that Archer mentioned they were from Earth,
yeah,
Udar attacked him.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, and I think
a programmed reaction or something. Like
absolutely,
that.
That's exactly it. So the definite evidence there of some form of conditioning at an early age, because it wasn't a considered response. It was a knee-jerk response.
Yeah. I have 2 points about those few scenes here. First point. This facility has been abandoned for 10 years. And, well, maybe not exactly 10 years, but for 10 years there was, you know, kids that are now probably like in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And then Udar was alone in there, and then later on he said that he left the camp about a year ago, and yet it's all pristine. There's not a speck of dust, there's nothing, everything's there waiting, like if, you know, there was somewhere here yesterday. So that was a bit strange. It didn't fit with the mood. I mean, if it's an abandoned station, it shouldn't be clean like that. I don't know what you think about that, but...
Well, even if Udar had been there on his own for however long, I mean, it could have been a year, it could have been 5 years, we don't know this, we've not been given that information. But even if he was staying there on his own, I would imagine that the cleanliness of the place and you know, waving a duster around it every so often would have been one of the last things on his mind.
Absolutely, yeah. And the second thing that that I noticed is that in this scene and later on, when Archer punched Udar, he used the back of his hand. I don't know if you noticed that. He didn't punch him with his fingers and his fist closed. It was like a giant slap from the back of the hand. And surely this is not an efficient way to knock someone down. But then that's what he did. And later on in this episode, when they fight, they use this back of the hand technique. Maybe that's something that that's actually efficient in the 24th century. I don't know.
I'll let you know in 400 years' time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did notice that the punch seemed, because I was expecting a full on fist right in the middle of the face punch, but actually Archer wouldn't have been able to deliver that because in the position that Udar was when he was attacking Archer, there's no way Archer could have pulled his fist back and punched him anyway. There was no room for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm quite surprised that that blow knocked him out in the first place, because it didn't seem that hard.
No.
So we're back aboard the Bird of Prey. Sung is looking at a pad that was kept by Rakeen. And he remembers him as a bright young man, very interested in astronomy. And he suddenly asks, very, very quietly, where Rakeen is. Of course, noticing that none of the other augments is either willing or able to provide any information about where he is. And then Malik tells Sung that Rakeen is dead. Now, Malik eventually admits to killing him in what he claims was self-defense as part of a confrontation. And he begins to get emotional, and Sung, enraged by the news, grabs Malik and pushes him up against a wall. And he tearfully apologizes to his father. He even uses the word father to presumably appeal to Sung's better nature, and apologizes for the killing. And Sung forgives him, telling him that maybe if he had been there for his children, things might have been different.
Yeah, and at that point, you can see Malik's face changing from, you know, crying and apologizing to, I wouldn't say something evil, but, you know, definitely proud of what he just did, and you know, very calculating and very, very frightening almost.
To me, it came across as relief, as in, I can't believe he bought that.
Yeah, that could be that too, yeah. But,
and
you know,
to be fair, I can't believe he bought it, to be honest with you. I'm starting to wonder now whether Sung is starting to have doubts in his mind in what he's actually created here, this race of beings. They appear to be capable of turning against each other. And, of course, we already know that Malik is capable of cold-blooded murder. But as far as Sung is concerned, you know, he's not aware of any of this stuff. But I'm starting to wonder now whether he has suspicions that things aren't as they are appearing to him.
I don't know if at this point he realizes that. I'm not sure.
Okay. I thought I saw something in his reactions, but possibly not. So we're back on the Enterprise in sickbay, and Archer is talking to Udar. Now, Udar had been left behind because, for some reason, he didn't have the same physical or intellectual gifts as his siblings, but he refuses to tell the captain where his brothers and sisters are headed, only that the Enterprise will not be able to stop them.
Yeah.
Now...
Sorry.
No, please.
No, I was going to say, it seemed to me that he kind of gave up really easily, you know. Maybe he was actually relieved to see someone after being left alone for so long, but, you know, he didn't really protest, or he was just there on sick base bed and just casually talked to Archer. I was expecting him to be a lot more uncooperative. And I don't know, that was something that bothered me here, but I can't really, you know, put my finger on it.
See, I don't know. He didn't really give much away.
Yeah, but he didn't fight either. So he was just like...
No, you know. I suppose not. The one thing I picked up from that exchange, even though it was a short exchange, and again, it wasn't mentioned in Memory Alpha's notes, but I picked up on it quite significantly, is the bit about his nickname. So Udar is his real name, but according to his brothers and sisters, they've given him the name Smike. Now, I'm not a Dickensian. I haven't read many of Dickens' books, if any at all. But apparently Smike was a character from Dickens' novel Nicholas Nickleby. Now, Smike in the book was treated badly due to a disability that he had. Yeah, and the similarity wasn't lost on me, and I wonder if this is a classic case of internal discrimination by his so-called family. He said that he wouldn't betray them, and yet they have clearly betrayed him.
Yeah, they've left him behind, so I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was you know, genetically bound to them and didn't want to betray them. I have no idea.
Potentially, there could be the whole family loyalty thing going on here.
Yeah.
But, well, we'll see. So then Tucker contacts Archer and tells him that the medical equipment that he was looking into that was missing from the settlement that they were searching were incubators, or artificial wombs, as they called them.
And he found out that just by examining some cables. Good job.
Well, we looked at the cables and they just look like fiber optic cables with just ends on them. There was nothing to say that, you know, they would have fitted specifically into one particular piece of hardware. But we knew that they were cables at the start, so I wonder whether he's gone and he's checked in the ship's inventory or something that said, well, these pieces of equipment should be here, but now they're not. What are they? Oh, they're incubators.
Yeah, probably. Something like that.
Hmm.
And so don't forget that he's good. So
Trip is good, absolutely. I'm sure he could find anything anywhere if he was asked to. Now, there was a scene here which Memory Alpha missed completely, and I don't know why, because actually it's not insignificant. So Malik was talking to Persis about Sung and how he's changed, suggesting that perhaps he's not the right person to lead the augments anymore.
It's a strange scene because Malik is I guess it's in the continuation of the scene where he apologized to Song, where we don't know really what he wants. How he's going to do that? At some point, Persis tells him that he once was the leader, and now Sung is the leader. And I'm guessing that he's not ready to, you know, to give up leadership. And it's one of those scenes where I think Malik our vision of Malik is. So slowly switching from just being an augment, trying to find his father, to actually being the villain in the story.
He's almost becoming affected by the power that he has, I suppose, given to himself.
Yeah. I guess he forgot that with great power comes great responsibilities.
Yeah, I think he missed that lesson.
Yeah.
But when Persis challenged him on what he was saying, effectively he was suggesting mutiny of some description.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of turned it on his head and he said he was just thinking aloud, as if to say, you know, I wouldn't have gone through with it.
Yeah.
But then her response was, I don't like this. I don't like this. What you're thinking. I don't like what it is you're thinking. And did. Am I detecting another wobble in her loyalty?
No, I picked that up too. That she's not. She doesn't agree with what he's doing.
Mm.
Yet it's still the same thing as last week. As you know, she's not. We still don't know actually if she's absolutely on Malik's side or if she's on Sung's side. Exactly the same as last week with Malik and. Help me there.
Rakeen,
thanks.
Yeah. Don't know. There's still a lot of story to go that mm-hmm. we know even now we haven't seen yet. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what route that goes down. So we're then back on the Enterprise, and Archer has received new orders from Starfleet. He has learned that there were over 1,800 other embryos kept at Cold Station 12. And since Sung is probably headed that way, Archer is given orders by Admiral Forrest to stop him using whatever force is necessary. Now, that's important because that comes up later on, using whatever force is necessary. Remember that. So after formulating a plan to get the embryos, the augments then hijack a Denobulan medical ship called the Barzai. And they do this by feigning a radiation leak. But as the Barzai arrives to aid them, they are held tightly in a Klingon tractor beam and then boarded by the augments.
Yeah, I found that the special effects when the Bird of Prey comes behind the Barzai, I thought there was something not, I don't know, it was not natural the way the Bird of Prey came into the frame. That's probably just the geek in me talking, but yeah, that was weird.
I have to admit, I didn't notice it.
Okay.
The maneuvering of the Bird of Prey behind the Barzai, I can't even work out where it came from. It was so quick,
yeah.
To position itself above. I don't know why I'm saying above. Above doesn't exist in space, but you know what I mean from our viewpoint. And then locked its tractor beam on. I didn't notice the special effects per se because I was more concerned about what was happening to the Barzai.
Picking up on what you said about, there's no up in space. Even though there's no up or down in space, every single starship are aligned the same, you know. So they can just, and you never see a scene where there's like one upside down and, you know, it's always the same orientation.
And of course, it doesn't matter whether you have two ships, one being upside down, one being on its side.
Yeah.
We always see them the right way up as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That might just be... this is going to sound really backwards, but it's probably it's contributing to the realism of it.
Yeah.
By not being real. Because absolutely, when we see things, we expect them to be the right way up. I think if this is 90% thing. If two ships rolled up, one sideways, one upside down, 90% of the people watching would just be like, "What?
That's silly." yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so we are once again back on the Enterprise, and Archer arrives in sickbay to learn that Udar is ready to be discharged. He informs Phlox that a colleague of his, Jeremy Lucas, is the station, Cold Station 12's senior medical director. Phlox then asks to be part of the boarding party. Archer accepts, obviously. And then he asks, I love this, he asks Udar to the captain's mess to talk, as Archer intends to try and get through to him. Now, I don't know whether you spotted this, and it was very, very subtle, but I thought that when Udar said, "Do I have a choice?" and Archer said, "No," I saw a little smile on Archer's face.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And nice. I don't know whether that smile was actually for Udar's benefit, as if to say, "No, you don't have a choice, but actually I'm trying to be nice here."
I don't know, but it was nice, yeah. I kind of expected this answer, but yeah, very well played, yeah. Now, about Jeremy Lucas, I'm pretty sure we didn't hear about him before. So at this point, I didn't know what to expect. Who was this person? And I'm not sure we know exactly the relation between Lucas and Phlox, or did I miss something from previous seasons?
Right, so I haven't looked back on this, but it has just occurred to me that during season... I think it was season two, we saw a couple of occasions when Phlox was, he was recording a letter to a colleague of his. And I'm wondering whether that might have been Dr. Lucas.
Probably, yes. Could be.
Because they used to work together and they've been friends for many years. So I don't know whether, it seems a bit of a jump from whatever it was in season two to wherever it is in season four. But I don't recall any mention of Lucas at any time between that. Certainly not during season three.
Yeah.
The recording might've been in season. Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
No, but yeah, if you haven't been paying attention, at that level, then you would be very much forgiven for wondering, you know, who this bloke is.
Dear listeners, if you know anything we've missed, please tell us.
And I do recognize the actor from something else.
Yes.
Richard Reel, I think his name is. And I've seen him in some other series. I'll have to dig that out and see if I can find out where that is. But I have seen him in other things. So we are now back on the Klingon Bird of Prey. In fact, no, we're not. We're now on the Barsai. They've infiltrated the Cold Station 12 using the Denobian ship. And Persis takes out two security guards without killing them, as Sung wished. Lucas, working in the lab, is then informed that the station's communications are down. And then everybody in the room is knocked out by an anesthesia gas. But before they all pass out, Lucas manages to initiate a black alert. Now, not a Discovery black alert. This is a different black alert.
It's not the same shade of black.
It's a different shade of black, obviously. Nothing started spinning and turning upside down on the station. That seemed rushed. Seemed really rushed. All of a sudden, there was a comms out, and then he went to check the comms, and then something happened, and then the gas came down. No, it was very, very rushed scene.
And it just, you know, gas comes down and he picks up Ankerchief to try and protect himself. I mean, he's a scientist. Surely he knows that's not a very efficient way to protect himself.
Maybe he's not a scientist.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
Mm. Maybe not. Oh, but Persis, did you see what she did to that security guard?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not an expert on human anatomy. I'm not an expert in close combat fighting. But if you uppercut someone on their chin to the point where you lift them up off the ground and they do a complete backflip without even touching the ground,
yeah,
that's going to do more than knock them out.
Yeah, that should probably take his head off.
Well, exactly. But all the same, that was an incredibly impressive punch.
Absolutely, yes.
So we're now back on the Enterprise. Archer is in the captain's mess with Udar. Archer is suggesting that Udar should go back to school when he gets back to Earth. Although Udar was under the impression that he would be jailed, Archer tells him that he wouldn't be punished on Earth. When he called Sung his father, Archer then takes out a pad which has his biological parents' information on it. Confused, he picks up the pad to read it. The only word I've written down here is boom.
Boom. Mag drop.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I mean, I'm feeling really sorry for the dude at this point. He's not only dealing with information that maybe humans aren't actually as bad as he's been told they are. He's now being given information relating to biological parents that he never even knew he had.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of information to process for him. And probably, you know, now he might start, you know, questioning everything he learned so far.
Including the conditioning that he was given, which again came up in this scene, that he automatically assumed he was going to get put in prison when he went to Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of humans.
The same brainwashing we were talking about earlier.
Are we really that bad, Yannick, as human beings?
I hope not.
We'll take somebody who is, you know, mostly human and just chuck them in jail.
I hope not, really.
No.
I hope not.
Certainly not.
Now, did you see the stick he had in his plate? I mean, it was a huge thing.
Oh, no, I didn't notice.
No, you should watch it again. It was like a huge stick in his plate. And you know, at the beginning, he was not touching it. And then Archer was having big chunks of steak. And he started to pick his fork and knife. And he you know, when that went at it, like he didn't have any food for... actually, he might not have had any real food for years.
No, because when they first went onto the settlement, Trip did mention the first thing he saw was a food synthesizer.
Yeah. Okay.
But so he's probably never seen a steak before, let alone eaten one. But I did notice that he was mirroring Archer's actions with regard to the knife and fork, because he didn't know how to use one. So Archer finds Phlox in the mess hall, trying to gain a bit of weight for his hibernation. He said he wanted to put on about 10% of his body mass so he can hibernate. But he says he's not hungry, dwelling on the fate of Dr. Lucas. Archer assures him that they're getting there as fast as they can. And during the conversation, he also relates his father's struggle with Clark's disease, noting that perhaps Sung has a point that genetic engineering doesn't necessarily have to be strictly legal, but could do some good. Phlox chalks it up to instinct being behind intellect, which I thought was a really interesting observation to make. But he also points out to Phlox that Denobulans had been working with genetic engineering for years, but they never even came close to destroying themselves. But possibly because they didn't have the whole instinct not being at the same level as intellect issue.
Yeah, it was actually explanations from last week's when we wondered why Phlox was so upset about what Sung did. So we know now, last week Ryan pointed out that we didn't know what the Denobulans did with the genetic engineering. So we know now that they used that in a reasonable way to fix disease and to enhance the Denobulan people.
Yes. And absolutely.
I want to give Ryan a shout out for predicting that the seed that Sung implanted in Archer's mind would actually, come back. And that's what happened. That's what happens here when Archer says, maybe if genetic engineering was not illegal, then maybe my father could have been saved, or at least, been better. So, yeah.
Yeah, good catch.
Good catch, Ryan.
So, upon breaking into Cold Station 12, things get a little bit uglier when Lucas says that he does not have access to the embryo chamber. He said that only Starfleet have that information. Malik says that he's lying, but Sung actually believes him and has the whole team locked up in a separate room. Lokesh, who I don't think we've met yet.
Nope.
He then gets to work on cracking the access code himself. But then just then they detect the Enterprise arriving. Sung hails Archer and forces him to turn around. And despite Archer believing Sung isn't a killer, it's only when he threatens to kill Lucas that Archer actually then turns the ship around. Yep. Now, I have an incredibly geeky observation. I don't know whether you know what I'm going to say. Lokesh said when he'd written an algorithm to try and crack this code, to try and work out the combinations, he said. And he said that there were a few hundred thousand combinations of a hexadecimal code.
Yeah.
Well, a few hundred thousand isn't a lot for base 16. A 5-digit hexadecimal number has over 1 million combinations. That means the code can't be any more than 5 digits long.
Yeah.
So is that a goof or what?
That's I'm sure that's just, the writers who didn't want to go and, compute the number of combination that you can have with, because we see later that the code is very long.
It's 16 characters. Yeah.
So what does the audience needs to know? That it's a lot, So a few hundred thousand.
Would you like to know how many? Because I actually wrote it down. It is 1.84 times 10 to the 19.
There you go.
That's how many permutations of a 16-digit hexadecimal string.
Okay, put that in the show and only 5% of your audience will understand what you're saying.
That's assuming they haven't already switched off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Few hundred thousand is, you know, it's enough for 90% of the audience.
It's that number again.
Yeah. Now, dear. did you notice that when Sung threatens his hostage with the Klingon disruptor and tells and asks Archer to turn around, and when Archer actually turns around, you see the look on Sung's face, he's really relieved that he doesn't.
Yes. Have
to, yeah. And the look on Malik's face is really disappointed.
Yes, I did. I did spot that. I also spotted that the Klingon disruptor that I thought that we now know it was. I thought it was a drill.
Yeah,
it looked like a drill.
Yeah, it didn't look as big as in the hand of a Klingon.
No. So I presume that the Klingon disruptors had evolved over time. The Next Generation. In the Next Generation universe, mm-hmm. the disruptors were like tiny things.
Yeah.
Not these huge, great power drill size things.
Yeah, but technology evolves, you know. Look at the size of our phones now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Again, we're talking 120 odd years between Enterprise and Next Generation.
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay, so we're still on the station. Lokesh realizes that there is another layer of encryption, possibly at the quantum level, they say, and I think they're just trying to blind us with science here. So it's buzzword bingo, isn't it? Let's try and chuck some more technical terms on here, and it just sounds better. Malik manages to find proof that Lucas was lying about being able to access the embryo chamber. The ship's logs reveal that he had actually managed to gain access to the room that the embryos were in a couple of days ago. So Sung calls him out of the room that he's locked into.
Yeah, I thought for a moment that Malik had engineered this proof just, you know, to force Sung to use violence and force against the hostage.
But now, see, that never occurred to me.
Really?
No, that's not at all.
That's the first thing I thought. I thought, you're making that up.
But no, that didn't occur to me. But okay. I was a little bit concerned that Sung accepted it at face value. He just looked at it and thought, oh.
Yeah, but what I told myself is that, you know, Sung bought into Malik's lie earlier when he apologized. He did his fake apology, and so I thought, you know, the bigger the lie, the easier it's gonna be. So I really thought he engineered that, but apparently not.
Well, clearly the exchange that happened earlier that you just mentioned about where Rakeem was, that didn't sway Sung's trust of Malik at all.
No.
Because he because of how easily and how quickly he was able to believe what he was being told. Now, it was the truth. We understand it to be the truth. But not even are you sure about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, okay, bring him in.
Mm.
Or out. Yeah, bring him out.
Bring him out, yes.
Can't speak tonight.
In the meantime, the Enterprise is transporting a team to the station before then backing off and moving back out of transporter range. And they managed to do the transport by matching the frequency of their transporter to the station's containment field. And again, this is another brilliant example of buzzword bingo. They're just they're making things sound cool. I mean, up to this point, we had no idea that there was a shield around the space station. I don't think it had ever been mentioned that there was a shield around the space station. So why mention it now?
It makes sense. It's a science facility with lots of pathogens, so it makes sense there's a contaminant field around that.
Yeah, I suppose. And actually, I would imagine that anything that's kind of floating through space needs some sort of form of containment field, so it doesn't get smashed into by passing rocks.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. Okay, yeah, well, ignore me. So, back in the station, Sung is starting to realise that Lucas is not going to give up the code for the embryo chamber, even at the expense of his people or his own life. Malik takes Sung aside and suggests... I think the wording he uses was he's not going to give anything up at the expense of his own life, so why don't we do it at the expense of someone else's?
Yeah.
And he suggests putting the station's deputy director into a tube.
Yeah, a glass tube.
And yeah, in, well, I don't know what it is. It's like the sound booths they put quiz show contestants into so that they can't hear what their partner's saying. Mm-hmm. And they end up exposing him to a Cymbeline blood burn. Now, it sounds awful. And I tell you something, it looked awful.
Absolutely,
that was one of the most gruesome scenes I've ever seen
on
an episode of Star Trek ever.
I agree. It was like, what's that?
But Sung isn't happy with the idea of doing this, but Malik manages somehow to convince him. And again, I think it's just this whole thing of being guided by Malik to the almost blindly.
Yeah, and Malik, you know, his confidence is growing, and I think that now, right at this point, he knows that he can pretty much do what he wants. And that Sung is going to say yes, even reluctantly, but he will.
But I'm struggling with this concept because right at the outset, Sung said nobody is to be killed. And he's basically sanctioning the gruesome and incredibly painful murder of somebody who, in their own right, has done nothing wrong.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work.
No, but you know, all the time that the deputy director is exposed, is trying to convince the director to give the code, and you can see that he's struggling. He doesn't want the deputy director to die, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure he does want that code very, you know, very much. So it might be that Sung is torn between, you know, hurting people and getting the access code, while Malik doesn't care; he just wants the code.
Yeah.
So they have a common goal, and didn't shock me to see that because all the time Sung was trying to actually give me the code and I can save him, so I don't feel like Sung was agreeing with Malik, but then eventually that didn't turn out how he wanted.
No, not in the slightest. Just as an aside, the deputy director does not have a name.
Ah, so.
Which is why we don't know his name.
Sorry for your deputy director.
Yes. So the nameless man died. Right, so Archer is leading a team of Malcolm, some Makos, Phlox, and Udar through the station. And they take out one of the augments, but it actually takes quite a few hits with a phase pistol to stun him, bringing, of course, the question of what it would take to kill him. Phlox then directs the team to a point where life support can be accessed and starts working on controlling it.
Yeah, it took three stuns to stun the augment, but what I found strange is that Uda was there and, you know, he didn't have any kind of reaction. He was just they're waiting patiently that they get in. there's something, again, something is not quite right, I think. Well, to me at least. And then Phlox says, you know, he opens a panel with his phaser, and then just takes one tiny little circuit and say, okay, that's life support. Everything goes through here. So I thought, you know, if all the life support of the whole station is only going through this small circuit, then
no redundancy.
Yeah.
Also, when did Phlox become an engineer?
Absolutely. Well, he said earlier that he knew the facility, but I mean, someone like Malcolm should have used the phaser to at least open the box, and maybe let Phlox then use, find the life support. But yeah, Phlox was holding the phaser. I guess if he's a surgeon, maybe he can be precise enough.
Yes, yes, indeed. So we're now back. I don't even know what room we're in. It's the lab. Let's call it the lab. So we're back in the lab, and Sung is getting desperate at Lucas for, basically because he's not cooperating, but clearly uncomfortable with the use of torture to achieve his goals. He pleads with Lucas, and when he tells him to go to hell, because Lucas does actually, in fact, at one point earlier on, Lucas whispered something in his ear, and Sung said, there's no need for language like that from a science man.
Yeah.
And I want to know what he said, because it would have been pretty good, because Sung's reaction was absolutely classic. At this point, this is where the notes from Memory Alpha tend to be slightly off, because actually at this point, the deputy director who is in this tube isn't dead. He is dying, certainly, but he is not dead. Sung decides that he's not going to get anything out of Lucas and decides to release the anti-pathogen, which is going to stop the deputy director from dying. But Malik defies him and refuses. And the tension between himself and Sung is starting to rise. Sung pushes him away and releases the anti-pathogen himself, but it is too late. At this point, the deputy director dies. During this time, while this is happening, Lokesh has detected that there is an anomaly caused by Archer. Basically the thing that Phlox is doing with the life support, that there's some kind of fluctuation happening. And one of the augments goes to check it out.
Yeah, remember that he sent one of the augments. That's going to be important later.
And I've just worked out why. That is a very good point. That's a good catch. I hadn't picked up on that. So back with Archer and Phlox and the rest of them, Udar is saying that he actually has really good hearing, and he's able to hear the other augments approaching. But they weren't quick enough, and the Mako lookouts that had been posted to watch out for them had already been captured by that point. So Udar's super hearing didn't actually have much of an effect at that time.
Yeah.
And I presume this is where you're going to come in and say...
Yeah, there was lots of augments in there.
There were about 10 of them.
Yeah.
Oh no, it was probably about 4 or 5 actually, because there was the Makos were in the scene as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It did seem as though only one got sent and 5 turned up.
And then what's that with the super hearing? What why did they bring that here? It didn't bring anything. I mean, they could have just, say surprise, we got you, and said, that's it. I mean, why bring the super hearing now when Udar says, oh, Phlox missed it. Hey, I can hear them. Yeah. Oh, sorry. They're already there. I don't know.
I wonder whether the script writers were trying to fill in the missing gap, because right at the very beginning, when Phlox was examining Udar, determined that he wasn't he wasn't an augment, he was an anomaly.
Yes.
So we must have known that there was some superhuman element to Udar, but up to this point we didn't know what that was. So they may just have thought, oh, hang on a second, we've got to fit this in pretty quickly. Let's give him super hearing, and it fails.
Yeah, let's give him something that's not going to be useful anyway.
So a bit pants in that respect, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've been captured, they get taken into the lab, and Udar approaches Sung. Sung thought that Udar was dead. An archer had confirmed that the augments lied to him. Now, Malik looks really quite worried at this point, but manages to recover quite quickly. And just as quickly as he recovers, he puts the blame onto Rakeen for issuing the orders to banish Udar because, quote, he wasn't strong enough, close quote. I'm not convinced by this.
I don't know. I'm not convinced either, but none of the other augments, you know, argued, and Udar didn't argue either. I mean, if Udar was there and Malik had banished him, surely he would told Sung, you know. So I don't know. That's a possibility that's true. I have no. I don't know. But
well,
now,
Sung was missing for a while though, wasn't he? As far as they were concerned.
Yeah.
But and also you've got however many augments, 18, 17, 17 augments, well, 16 if you don't include Udar, that are seemingly completely and totally loyal to Malik.
Yeah.
So they're not going to suddenly stand up and dispute what he's saying.
And yeah, that wouldn't fit with what Rakeen wanted to do on the previous episode. He wanted to just, you know, for the augments to go live their lives peacefully. So probably would have taken Udar with them. So yeah, so okay. I now think that Malik was lying again.
Yeah, oh totally. This is just another way of trying to deflect the focus away from himself.
Yeah.
So by now the Enterprise has figured out that the team has been captured, and they go back to the station and hail it. And Sung answers, and they have a brief conversation, but then Archer very, very quickly yells out for T'Pol to execute your orders, he says. She ends the communication from the Enterprise side and instructs Sato to send a message to the space station, which effectively instigates its auto-destruct.
Yes, if you're planning to give your first officer an order in that kind of situation, surely you should work out something that is a little bit quicker to say than T'Pol execute your orders. You know, like, I don't know, cut blue or something like this. That's very quick. Because, you know, there's plenty of time to shut the conversation or shoot Archer.
Unless the word was, or the code word was so specific that nobody else would ever have known it, if it was just code blue, how could T'Pol have been absolutely convinced that it was Archer that said it? Because those two words, you may not have actually recognized the voice.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I'm clutching at straws here. Absolutely, yeah. clutching at straws.
But they could have, you know, prepare that, and I have a special, you know, special code or something. But I really thought that T'Pol execute your orders was maybe, I don't know, maybe too long or something. It's just the geek in me that's talking again.
But also, where did that come from? When or where was that arranged? Now, obviously, I'm now sort of going back to Admiral Forrest, and I made a point of saying earlier on, you know, remember the phrase using whatever force is necessary. And I think this is what this is. I think this is the whatever force is necessary.
Absolutely.
But there was no clue that this is what T'Pol would have been ordered to do. And the fact that she did it so blindly, but that would have been, you know, complete loyalty to Archer. And again, you saw a good example of T'Pol struggling with what she's been ordered to do. The emotion was there again. So we are coming to the end of the episode. Sato discovers that the message that she sent to initiate the auto-destruct, came back to her, but it was amplified by a factor of 1,000% or something, which managed to render the comm inoperable. So T'Pol instead turns to weapons to destroy the station. But as they are approaching the station, getting close enough to deploy the photonic torpedoes, as they call them in that day and age, the Klingon ship comes from behind and attacks on them, fires on them and moves away, presumably to try and get the Enterprise to follow it, to take it away from the station itself. But T'Pol ignores that and pushes on towards the station. Once again, you can see that T'Pol just really isn't happy with this idea of firing weapon. There's one thing to instigate a self-destruct on a station, because that's indirect. But what she was about to do then was actually fire torpedoes at the station where her colleagues were. That's more of a direct action.
Absolutely, but desperate times, you know. Mm. Also, did you notice that this time they were able to lock on the target while still being thousands of kilometers away, while on was that 3 weeks ago they had to be like 1 kilometer away from the so I don't know, maybe they upgraded the targeting array since then.
It was a much bigger target, to be fair.
Yeah, okay.
I have a complaint.
Should.
So last week I made a comment about something that Archer didn't say.
Yes.
Now, when T'Pol was telling them to get the photonic torpedoes ready, she uttered the words, "Take us in."
Yeah.
Now, why is she allowed to say "take us in" and Archer does not say "take us out"?
Yeah, we should write to those writers. Send them a letter. You know.
Well, it's not too late to change it.
Is it?
It's been less than 20 years. It's not too late to change it.
Yeah, they can reshoot this scene. And then change it on the DVDs.
I'm sure with makeup and special effects, they can make the the actors look the same as they did 18 years ago. So we're back in the lab again, and Malik has picked up on the friendship between Phlox and Lucas and decides to take things into his own hands as he openly defies Sung and proceeds to expose the Denobulan doctor to a pathogen. Although I don't think he actually does that. He locks him in the same tube or another one of the tubes that the deputy director was in as well. But I don't think he actually instigates it at this point.
No, and it was another tube because it was clean, this one.
It was, but the other one was messy.
Yeah.
So messy. So Lucas now realizes that the augments are not bluffing. So he reveals the code in order to save Phlox, although it almost doesn't work. He gets very close to pressing the button there, actually. So he reveals the code and the augments are finally able to steal the embryos and get away. Sung wants Udar to come with them, but he said, "No, I would prefer to stay." Sung says, "I understand," wishes him well, and leaves to go and get the embryos. After he's gone, Malik decides to take some of the pathogens for himself as a form of insurance.
Yeah, I was not sure what he was doing at this point. I thought that maybe he was, getting ready to, release the pathogens in the atmosphere of the station to kill everyone.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been the obvious thing to do at this point, but no, at this point that's not what he seems to be doing. He's kind of thinking, I've got myself some toys here. Let's take some of these pathogens with us, and we can use them as weapons as and when we need them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once again, I was going to use the word evil, but he's not only he's reacting to the current situation with lots of cold violence and stuff like that. Now he's planning ahead to and using those pathogens, he's planning ahead, and I'm pretty sure he says that it's for insurance, but I'm pretty sure he's you know wanting to use that actively as an attack against against someone we don't know yet. But I'm sure he's lying to Persis at this point.
I finally worked out the word that describes him, and it took me this long to do it. Manipulative.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's a perfect word, yes.
Yeah, it's taken a while, but yeah, that's the word I've been wanting to use all this time. He's manipulative.
Yeah.
One thing I did pick up on is that Malik actually attacked Sung during that scene.
And that seemed to...
It's the first time I've seen him do it.
That seemed to bother the others. I mean, if you look at the reaction on their faces, they were a little they were bothered by that, but... Again, as you said earlier, loyalty and all that, so they didn't do anything.
Mm. But again, if Malik believes that he is the better leader of the Augments, because he said himself that the Augments need to be led by an Augment, if his followers, his fanatics, are of the same belief, then they're certainly not going to start questioning Malik's actions.
Yeah.
Particularly if they are also of the opinion, because if you think about it, everything that Sung has done to condition and groom the Augments into effectively holding humans in contempt, he's been doing to himself.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
Because he is human.
Yeah, he's getting the fruits of his own, you know, brainwashing and conditioning. Yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. And there was another scene here which wasn't documented in the Memory Alpha summary, with Sung and Udar in the embryo room.
That was not Udar, that was Lukash.
Oh, was it? Oh, sorry, my bad. Well, no. The end result is the same.
Yeah.
It was a reminiscent scene where clearly Sir Sung hasn't been in there for 20 years. And he was reminiscing that, you know, that's where Saul was. That's where Persis was. That's where you were referring to Lokesh. And it kind of brought forward Sung's humanity. And I almost started liking the guy at that point. Not too much, mind you, but just a little bit.
Yeah, I liked him too. You know, just because he's probably going to get, you know, kicked out of his leadership position. So I believe he's falling on the lovable side of the scale. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, this scene was clearly filmed in front of a green screen, as you could see. But yeah, it was really touching scene.
And yeah, definitely.
When you know, I don't know how I can remember where each of the those little they look like Pokeballs actually.
They did, yes.
Where they were 20 years ago, but yeah, it was really really nice.
I don't think it's beyond the realms of believability that he could remember where they were. I think if you were there 20 years ago, there's 1,800 of those things in this room. There are 19 gaps. I don't imagine he would have gone too far from one place in order to pick the 19 that he chose.
Yeah, okay. So, now, just question. You pick 19, essentially, you know, embryos, so 19 containers. Mm-hmm. Let's not use Pokeball, but 19 containers. How can you know that... The embryo in this container is now Malik or is now Persis?
Wow. Okay.
Ha. Gotcha.
Yeah, well and truly. No, that is a very good point.
You know, unless, you know, maybe, you know, he wrote the names on there before they were born and then, you know, kept track of which embryo is.
But he would have had to have known their gender.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you that one.
Thank you.
point to you, sir. So we're almost done. As Saul puts Archer into the locked room with the rest of his team and the station staff, Archer does the classic, opens the door in his face, or pushes the door into his face, and then there's Malik ready to fight with him. And he now says that he's been trying to think of a reason why to kill him, and now he has the justification to do so. He fights him hand to hand and then decides he doesn't have the time to waste fighting with him. And instead, he sets a containment breach, which will release all the pathogens stored on the station, killing everyone there. But he doesn't want his brother to die like that. So he kills him.
Yeah. And I didn't see that coming.
No. Not in the slightest.
And that puts a definitive, this guy is evil tag on Malik.
Totally. There's absolutely no doubt as to who he is now. He's made his decision. He's made his move. This is who he is.
Yeah. Now we have a bad guy to, you know, to hate.
Yeah. And to be honest, I quite liked Udar. I thought he was going to become the savior of the race, I suppose, is probably the best description I can come up with. Mm-hmm. You know, he was different from them in many, many ways. And I thought he was going to, I suppose, bring the rest of them down, bring them back in line with their humanity. But nope, it wasn't to be.
Nope.
So the Enterprise sees the shuttle with Sung and the rest of the augments on board, leaving towards the Klingon bird of prey. They try and shoot it out the sky. There is no sky. Try and shoot it down, but they're too slow to disable it. But the ship is able to dock with the bird of prey very, very quickly. It's just boom, gone. Warps away. Yeah,
that was... I don't know, strange again. I mean, this is the shuttle just gets inside the docking bay and then poof, the bird of prey is gone.
But warp takes a few seconds to warm up.
Yeah.
Always has done.
And you know, when docking inside a ship, then there's procedure and surely you cannot jump to warp. You're gonna
fire out the back of it.
Yeah.
No, even the, was it the Excelsior? Even the Excelsior took about 10 seconds to boot up its warp engines.
Yeah, and I have to watch the scene again, but I'm pretty sure they went to warp with the docking bay door still open.
Yeah. It would have had to go into the docking bay, land, be secured,
yeah.
The door closed.
Pressurized.
Yeah, exactly. And then gone into warp.
Yeah.
But I don't suppose that would have worked because then the Enterprise would have been able to shoot them out the sky again, which can't happen. But anyway, we're at the very end now. Lucas tells Archer how to stop the containment breach, which involves him going to something called the primary junction, which presumably is the point where the brains of the space station. Exist, but he has less than 4 minutes to do it. The very end of the scene, we see him in this tube of some description, and we see him climbing up it, and then at the bottom of the screen in big letters, "To be continued."
Yeah.
So the third part of this will be next week.
Yeah. I believe that's what they call the Jefferies tubes.
I thought the Jefferies tubes were. Do you remember the? The season 3 episode when they effectively shut the ship down and they went into the nacelles to it was when they were entering the expanse, so it would have been at the end of season 2. Was it the end of season 2?
Yeah, but it was on the catwalks. I believe.
Oh, you're right. Because the episode was called Catwalk, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Sorry. But yeah, okay. There might have been the Jeffries tubes then. But yeah, climbing up one of those very, very brightly lit tubes. And to be continued, yeah.
And big enough to be pretty sure that Archer won't make it in 3 minutes. You know, he looks up and you don't see the end of the ladder, and he looks down and you don't see the end of the ladder either. So
it didn't help that he was stood there for about 20 seconds looking up at it thinking, what?
Yeah.
You know, time's ticking, Jonathan. Get a move on.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he'll make it.
Something's going to happen.
Well, there's another 16 episodes to go yet. So he can't die from pathogen exposure just yet.
He's a hero. He cannot die.
Well, exactly. And I know for a fact he's in the last episode. So, you know, spoiler alert. So that's where we are. That's the end of our review of season 4, episode 5 of Star Trek Enterprise, Cold Station 12.
So, should we move on to some news for this, this fortnight?
Yes.
And news every 2 weeks.
Yep. There is some cracking stuff in the news this time around.
Absolutely. So, let's start with a bit of Star Trek Picard news. Season 1 of Star Trek Picard wraps filming. Showrunner Michael Chabon took to Instagram to tell the world that shooting of Season 1 of Picard has officially ended. Sometime at the beginning of this month, of September 2019, for our future listeners. However, visual effects supervisor Ante Dekovic reminded the fan that Star Trek Picard is hardly done, and there's still a lot to do in post-production.
So we're gonna that is singing your own praises, that is, because if it was the showrunner or the director saying that, then I could have taken that quite nicely. But the visual effects supervisor saying there's a lot of visual effects stuff to be done yet is, that's almost like saying, yeah, well, the filming was mediocre, but we'll make it better.
Yeah, and probably that's just now that the visual effects team is starting to work on this, so... So we're going to have a link to this news in our show notes. Still in the Star Trek Picard series of news, Robert Picardo, who played the holographic emergency medical doctor, I don't remember exactly the name, but that he was the holo doctor on Voyager, may appear in Star Trek Picard. During the London Film and Comic Con, Picardo revealed that he is in discussions with CBS to make an appearance on Star Trek Picard. If he does, he will be the second Voyager cast member to do so. The first being, of course, Jeri Ryan, who reprises her role as Seven of Nine. And we will also have a link to this news in our show notes.
The reason you can't remember Robert Picardo's character name in Voyager is because his character name was The Doctor.
Yeah, I know. I was looking. I was looking at the HMS. Was that HMS or HME? EMH. Emergency medical hologram. There we go. That's it. Thank you. That's why we have co-hosts, you know, on this show. That's why two brains.
Well, I actually wanted to find out for myself because, having not watched Voyager yet, I want to know who these people are that have very similar names to characters.
Globally, Voyager is not the best series, but those episodes where the Doctor, the story is centered around the Doctor, those are actually good. There's one complete episode where the Doctor is looking for a name, for his name, how he's going to be called, and he goes, you know, over the names of famous people, and then he always finds something to say, nah, no. And then at the end of the episode, he said, you know what, the best name I have is the Doctor. So, yeah. If you can watch this episode, I believe that's one of the good ones. And I'm sure Ryan and Michael will confirm or deny that.
Do you think they stole the idea of a character called the Doctor with no other apparent name from Doctor Who?
It's possible. I'm pretty sure the new versions of Doctor Who weren't running when Voyager started. So if they did that, they based it on the original series of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think the new series of Doctor Who came out in 2005. Is it 2005? Yeah. I've got that in my head for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I still have to put my hand on some of the old older episodes of Doctor Who, but that podcast is not about Doctor Who, so...
No. Although we could start one.
Yeah. Yeah, we could. I mean, there's no such thing as too many podcasts.
Well, I'm not doing enough podcasts at the moment. I think I'm doing five. I've got room for more, it's fine.
Yeah, there's nights and then there's many days in the week. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Still have weekends.
I'll just quit my job. Plenty of time then.
Yeah, jobs, it's overrated anyway. Yeah. Now we have a series of wonderful news for Star Trek Discovery. And that's the fact that Star Trek Discovery won many awards. So the first one is for the prosthetic makeup team, who won the Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup for a Series, Limited Series, Movie, or Special category. And that's an Emmy Award. I forgot to mention that. An Emmy Award for that. And, congratulations to the Prosthetic Makeup team. Because, yeah, they're doing a really good job on this series. There are some pictures in the news that we're going to link in the show notes of actors being... You know, at different stage of their transformation, and very, very good job, and congratulations on the Emmy Award.
It kind of throws out our entire argument about the Klingons,
yeah,
and how the Klingons are so different to those that we knew in the Next Gen,
yes,
universe. But for Star Trek Discovery to come out and get an award for prosthetics. And to be fair, really the only prosthetics of note are those of Saru. I can't remember what his race is.
And the
Klingons.
Yeah, there's one. I think in the show notes, if you have a look, there's one character that's. Kind of a fish, you know. You can see him in the first season, I believe, and he's on the bridge, and he's awesome too. Now, still in the awards category, Duke Jones, who plays Saru, we were just talking about the prosthetic of Saru, he won a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actor in this series. So, congratulations, Duke Jones, for this award.
Definitely pleased about that. He's a brilliant brilliant character acting in Discovery.
And Sonika Martin Green, who plays Michael Burnham, also won a Saturn Award for Best Actress in a Streaming Presentation. So congratulations too. I didn't know there was an award for a streaming presentation, but congratulations.
Okay, and I'm not sure what that is, to be honest.
No, it's an award.
Yeah.
And finally, Star Trek Discovery on its whole thing won a Saturn Award for the best streaming science fiction, action, and fantasy series. So, congratulations to the whole team.
The whole Discovery team, absolutely.
Yeah, very.
I wonder if by streaming presentation they mean the fact that it was available only on subscription services over the internet.
Yeah, I believe the Saturn Award. Are something that's specific for streaming services, so
right,
and that's why they got that. But very well deserved awards to hold the winners, and we hope that season 3 will be released soon. I think it's still shooting, probably even in the early stages of shooting season 3. But can't wait for season 3 of Star Trek Discovery.
Absolutely. It's going to be fantastic.
And that concludes our roundup of news this week. So we would like to thank everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. We are really appreciative of that, and that you would give up some of your time to listen to both of us and our guests when we have guests on the show. Thank you very much. Our podcast can be found everywhere fine podcasts are, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and on our website, and probably on other sites or directory that we are not aware of. So if you are aware of somewhere we are and we didn't mention it in this show, please send us a feedback. We will give you all the details later on.
The same applies, actually, if you spot somewhere where we aren't.
Yes. If there's a directory or something that we should be and we are not, please tell us. Also, help us spread the word by sharing the show on social media, talking to a friend, and if you're so inclined, please leave us a nice review in your podcast app.
Indeed. And thank you very much indeed to the guys from Memory Alpha. We have used material from the article called Cold Station 12 from Memory Alpha, which is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Hockey dockies. So you can find us on Tinterwebs. Go to our website, which is teearlgreyhot.org. And of course, if you want to leave us feedback, one of the ways you can do that, of course, is to leave a note on the show notes. There's a commenting function at the bottom of every show page.
Yes, there is also a contact form if your feedback doesn't relate to any episodes. Especially if you want to talk about anything, about the website, about our audio quality, about... maybe subjects that you may want us to talk about on the show, or even if you want to come and join us on the show, just you can go to our website on the contact form, which I believe is tlgreyhot.org/contact.
Indeed. You can also send us an email. Our address is feedback@tlgreyhot.org. We read absolutely everything we receive. And if you want us to, we will read, we will read out your feedback on the show unless you tell us otherwise. I think that's probably the safest way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Telegram, and to make things easy, we have the same handle on all those social networks. That's TEGH Podcast. Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram.
We're also on Mastodon, but rather than just say we're on Mastodon, username TEGH Podcast, just to make things confusing, there are 500 million different Mastodon servers around the world. We are on mastodon.social. So if you go to mastodon.social/TEGH Podcast, you can find us there.
Unless otherwise stated, this episode is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution Share Alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you publish something based on this episode, you have to release it under the same license. Also, if you use some parts of the review, this is released under a non-commercial license, so take care of that. You should not be using that to make some money.
And of course, do not forget, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. If you want to find out more about our shows, go to otherside.network.
Absolutely. And next episode will be a review of Enterprise Season 4, Episode 6, The Augment, and we will be joined by another mystery special guest. Or is that a special mystery guest?
I don't know. It's one of the two.
Do you have any idea who that guest will be?
I think I might have a clue who that guest might be.
Oh, you're going to have to let me in on the secret then.
Well, maybe it could be as much of a surprise to you as it is to our listeners.
Maybe.
Although you will find out before them anyway, because obviously we record first. But yes, it's going to be a really good episode. The guest that we are having on, I'll give you a little bit of a clue. He is human.
Ah, okay. So
that means... he is male. I gave that one away without intending to. But he's a really nice bloke. He's a really nice bloke.
That's all we're going to say.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to give too much away, do I? Otherwise, people won't come and listen to us. They're thinking, oh, I don't want to listen to him.
Well, you said he's human. That limits the possibilities, though. But
I suppose it does. But I did ask if there were any Romulans available, and no one responded.
Well, that's it for this episode of Tea Earl Grey Hot. We will catch you next week with our next episode. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.